Alright. Looks like day in paradise. Oh. I think this is... It could be the second week, but I think it's actually the first week we're coming into that it hasn't gone below freezing. The indicator for... temperature for the next 10 days usually shows a line for where freezing is, but when none of the indications are that it will go to freezing, it doesn't even show that line, doesn't show that bar. So that's kind of the sign. In praise of that, my friend Dylan at work, my cohort in sysadmin world, he wore shorts a few days last week. Friday he got up into the 90s. This week it'll only get up into the 80s, but it's warm enough. So we're definitely getting into spring. I've got 4 weeks of work until my next vacation. Lisa and I just had one in March. Still got 80 hours of leave to my name. So taking a week off right before Memorial Day. JAM is coming to see us, which is Joshua, Alejandra, and Moises. They're coming for a visit, and they're going to be there for a few days. And we're going to put them up somewhere. If it's in a motel, maybe it's in a motel. Lisa and I haven't really talked about recreational vehicle idea in a while. I don't know if that's because it needs to go away or whatever. I really am kind of in interested in my kids being able to have a place to stay, and if I can be a part of making that happen, although I don't, like I said, I don't think hanging around Toucan Carry is really the right way to go, honestly. However, so, not exactly sure what to do there. I think it ended up being a stupor of thought, and we decided against it. Of course, I'm bad, and very much I don't readily let go of things so easily. Kind of sad, but. Where things are going there. Pardon me. Runny nose for a while. I need to take my allergy stuff. Gracious. Better memory for these things. Anyway, so I I'd always heard of the blogger knackle, kind of the blogging Latter-day Saint oriented blogs. And the really sad part is that that, I think, kind of faded away and disappeared. And what's left is really a bunch of I don't know the right way to describe it except to call it softcore anti-Mormon porn is what we're left with by and large. Most of the blogger space is basically chewing apart the brethren, chewing apart church doctrine. All the old complaints. Why can't women have the priesthood? Why is the church so mean to LGBTQ, LBGRAQR, plus community people, which I think is hilarious. There's not a community in there. Except what's formed on the internet. Very sad that these are the kinds of things that form. Wadded up inside your gut, and you just have to spew it constantly. It's almost the form of an anti-mission. You gotta go out and you gotta destroy as many testimonies. Rip as many people as you can away from stuff, and all the stuff you have to do, and everybody talks about, well, we're forming a community of people who've been damaged by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, those god-awful Mormons. And it's like, you know, and I know I've said time and time again, I don't understand where they get this institutional hatred from. It's not logical. Anybody who is kind of detached from the whole idea really doesn't know much about Latter-day Saints and really doesn't know much about, you know, these just rabid anti-Mormons, you know, would certainly look and say, you know, the church seems like it's not too bad, you know, doesn't seem very, very evil, wicked, punitive, torturing people and all that stuff, but you listen to the anti-Mormons and the kind of rhetoric they spew, and it's just like, oh my gosh, this is, Mormons are worse than Nazis to these people. And it's like, where do you, you know, and I think an outside observer would just go, I don't know where these people come from, but they are crazed. Whoa! What on earth is their issue? Oh, like people who got tied up in some corner and got force-fed lime green Jell-O and you know, slapped around with frozen temple garments, you know, to punish them for how dare you say any, you know. And it's just, guy, what? Anyway. So one of these people is just crazy. Well, you know, it's not, you know, it's not nice to say that. We shouldn't say things that aren't nice. I'm sorry. This woman has formed a complete anti-belief system, which I think is hilarious because it's all wrapped around the way Joseph Smith stated something in the King Follett Discourse that uses slightly different, one different word than what Doctrine and Covenants section 93 says. It's about the difference between being intelligences, being born in some manner, spiritually, before you were born in mortality with a mortal body, the kind of bodies that we have now. The Latter-day Saint concept of it, and it's been taught for, it's been taught very definitively, even according to this lady, since Brigham Young. That's been a long time. It's been about 200 years. And there is some people, and she's one of them, who seems to think that we have wandered off violently from the doctrine as taught by Joseph Smith. And it's all her interpretation of one statement. It wasn't really even a statement, it was a word that he was talking about the eternal part of us that has existed forever. You know, it was not created by God. There is a part of you, and in section 93 it's referred to as intelligence. And this intelligence has always been. And then you were born with a spirit body. You became a child of our heavenly parents, heavenly father, heavenly mother, or whatever. And then you were born things. Actually existed in three different states so far, people have. Well, she has decided that in the case of the King Follett sermon, he was describing this thing that in section 93 was called intelligence, and he used the word spirit. Now, when he used the word spirit, she pounced on that and said, oh, well, I forget the term that she used. She uses it a lot. It's become kind of a phrasing, kind of like how the agenda of God is kind of a tagline for me, at least in this article. This other thing was a tagline for her, and I'm really sorry that I don't have it in front of me. And I can't tell you what that tagline really is. I don't even know if I can describe it adequately. You know, she would say, well, you just don't understand what I'm talking about. I'm like, fine. She does indicate very, very, very truthfully, very well what the current beliefs of the church are, and they're not really changed, Brigham Young, and you have to understand, Joseph Smith had a heck of a growing process from when he was a teenager up until he died at 38, where he was being given a lot of information as he could handle it. Some of it he got very early, but it never really got put into any kind of set form until very late, close to his death. Some of the recording and the expansion of the Doctrine and Covenants, which is dated far earlier, did take place over the next few years after Joseph's death. A lot of people like to say that Brigham Young was insane, or whatever, or he was crazy, and we really don't have much to go on that one. You know, there's plenty of people who say that he was totally uninspired. And one can have that opinion if they like. You know, plenty of splinter groups happened at that place after Joseph died. There was splinter groups that went off. The bulk of the people followed Brigham Young to Utah. But a significant number didn't. Some of them just wandered off and just, you know, it was like, well, this is over. Joseph Smith was wonderful. He was a prophet, but that's it. It's over. There were groups that ultimately, after almost 20 years, coalesced into what is today called the Community of Christ. It is the biggest Latter-day Saint movement splinter group. And there was a whole lot of stuff that they just jettisoned. You know, the whole thing about plural marriage and stuff like that, they just don't believe that. You go, okay, well, you know, you can create whatever belief system you want to, and that really ended up being kind of my attitude toward this woman, who was really rolling out the same old tropes that always get rolled out. You get kind of tired of it because they're always trying to make it fresh. She was doing it by saying, oh, there's one word in the King Fallen Sermon that totally destroys the whole idea of being intelligent. We were spirits long before, you know. And that we weren't really born, you know. Her, she's very feminist. She's very supportive of LGBTQ, blah, 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 everything. The thing that the church needs to be very accommodating of any kind of marriage that one can come up with, including no marriage at all, and say that, she is a believer in exaltation, which is interesting. I would think that somebody along her lines would have jettisoned the whole concept of exaltation a long time ago, so she definitely would need to form her own splinter group and start her own church, name it whatever she likes, you know, appoint herself the prophetess of it, you know, based on this stuff, tell everybody that she is the correct heir of Joseph Smith or whatever, you know, however she would authorize herself to do this. And And that our the quote heavenly parents are nothing but adoptees, and they're going, well, you know, it says I'm not adverse to the idea, but it kind of flies in the face of why you bother having families here. And I was saying, if we are just, if the heavenly parents just kind of went and found us somewhere and said, hey, we'll give you the opportunity to become like we are. And it was like we said, oh, please, take me, take me. And that was basically it. I said, well, then the mortal analog of that, and I'm sorry, everything tends to work in a similar fashion from one estate to another, from the pre-earth life to earth life to post-earth life. Otherwise, your time on earth is just the stupidest charade that's ever been. And you really have to say a lot of things about, okay, well, then I guess I don't have a problem with people who don't believe in God, because, frankly, not having a God makes more sense than earth life does if Heavenly Father and Mother just took less developed spirits, which is kind of how she portrayed the whole thing, and kind of took them in and, you know, and said, this is how you can become like us. And she even says, you know, this is, there's no problem with there being single gods. And you're going, then why did Heavenly Father and Mother bother coming together? What was the point? Why not just stay separate and single and do your own thing? I said, you have a choice. You can have two men marry together and become exalted gods. You can have two women do it together. You can do that. And you're going, you know what? I said, why does it matter? If you can become a god without being joined together, completing two people, and I mean that's man and woman, obviously extremely different beings, really, when it comes down to it. And you're going, so what was the point? Why did you need to get sent here? What were you being tested for? If you don't care about marriage, well then, what's the point? It says, and then it comes right down to it. Okay, if that's true, then how come copulation and conception are needed to bring spirits into the world? Why isn't it like some very, in the old days when parents didn't want to explain to their very young children how conception happens. It says, and that's, I don't have a problem with that you do that. It's kind of like telling people about Santa Claus. And, Santa Claus is this wonderful thing, and then you find out later that your parents made it up, and it's kind of fun, and it's a cute story. You can sit there and you can get angry at them and say, you lied to me, you pig, I hate you for the rest of your life. And you're going, wow, Kai, get a grip. Back in the old days, parents used to say, we found you under a cabbage leaf out in the garden. That's how people are born. Or the stork comes and just leaves you somewhere. The stork brought you to us. And, just interesting stories that come from strange old tales. Hard to say whether it's good or not, but it at least answers a question for children until they can get to the point to where they can where they can understand conception. And I'm not in favor of really doing it early. It's not important until it starts becoming something that's physically possible. Of course, now, I don't know what we've done to the human body with the interesting things we put into the plastic and stuff like that, that are making it so that 8-9-year-old girls are growing breasts like they're 14 or 15. And they're fertile. They're going, and you're going, oh my gosh, I've got to tell this kid about the birds and the bees. See, another euphemism that we use to talk about conception and how one conceives children. They're going, but yeah, it's just, you know, it sounds like, under those circumstances, it sounds like if this life is to be a type of our existence before, since we're throwing out the whole concept of family, not just in mortality, but in pre-Earth life too. These people aren't really your parents. They kind of sort of adopted you. And you don't have parents. Nobody has parents. You know, and it's like, well, then I'm confused. How come some people develop early and some people late? You know, and you go, boy, is that fair? What's going on with that? It makes sense. If you're born, that makes sense. You simply weren't there before. How did Heavenly Father and Mother skip the line? I guess would be a bitter pill to try to answer. But if there's no real binding between a mother and a father and their children, like there is just by nature here, I tried to swallow too much orange at once. Oh, big old chunk. I apologize. Then why doesn't it work that way? Now, and I'm bad, you know, this is me driving down the road trying to recall this thing, doing a bad job of it, trying to describe why I think it's a really people who say that our concept of exaltation doesn't make any sense. This woman trying to shoehorn modern concepts of sexual deviance and transvestite dogma in the pre-Earth life is just hilarious, because what actually, once you get an understanding of it, can bring a lot of meaning and make better sense of why things are on this earth the way they are. This thing just this whole idea just blows it out of the water. And I really apologize for not putting the term on it, because if you put the term on it, you could go look it up and you'd go find this lady's article about it. I'm reasonably sure almost immediately. As far as I'm aware of, she isn't. She probably hasn't been on Mormon Stories. She might be, but I doubt it. Because you know, the guy who does that, the DeLynn fella, he's a psychologist. He's a reasonably intelligent person. You know, he's got degrees. He's well, I don't know. Some people come back and say he doesn't ever really have a degree in it, except to say maybe a bachelor's or a master's. He doesn't really have a PhD in psychology. He has a psychological training on some level, and I don't think he would let this person on his thing talking about this, because it's like, well, you know, he spends most of his time dealing with the psychological damage that happens within the LDS Church and how he helps people escape, you know, continuing abuse at the hands of the church, telling you what you can do, telling you what you can't do, stuff like that. I don't think he'd be very interested in some weird offshoot doctrine. This is definitely up somebody else's alley. I really don't know who those people would be. I think a lot of the anti-Mormons who try to be sensical would probably try to distance themselves from this woman. Just because. But in the modern version of the Bloggernacle, she was featured. This was where I found her and found this idea. Which I have dubbed "God Found You Under a Cabbage Leaf." And you're going to get to find your own spirit children under cabbage leaves as well. And it's like, okay. I don't know how it works. That's one of the things, you know, she got really upset because she goes, you know, and they just won't tell you how, you know. So she paints it as, you know, keeping all those heavenly mothers down the farm, barefoot and pregnant, you know, punching out little spirit children. And you're going, what on earth gives you the idea that this is how the LDS Church views it? You know, this has got to be, you know, this one, I mean, you can poke holes in it far easier than you can in the actual plan of redemption method of looking at it. You don't know the mechanics of it, but when she starts describing it, you just go, you know, I don't think she really believes this stuff either. But it just sounds so... sounds so compelling. I'm sure she thinks that she's going to get something, disciples, I don't know. Transgendered people who she says, hey, look, Joseph Smith, stay in this in a certain way once, right before he died, and one change of word means that, hey, you could be a god too. Based on one word in a statement made by Joseph Smith at a funeral, have discovered, it's been there since he died. Gee whiz, how long ago was that? 200 years ago? Almost. Up all these wonderful doors, and that Joseph Smith was this amazing open-minded guy. And everybody else that followed him as church presidents, as prophets, we're a bunch of guys with an axe to grind, going after a horrible agenda, which basically teaches you to be a good person, and even to be kind of a better person, hold yourself to a higher standard. But part of that higher standard was marriage, and family, and raising that family, just like the Heavenly Father did among us as we were spirits. That makes a lot more sense than, well, you got picked by them looking under a cabbage leaf in the pre-earth life, but they sent you down here to go the trails of childbirth and stuff like that, and you go, you know, and her big thing was how terrible and horrible the whole concept is, and how much it hurts the feminine soul, and how much it pains those who aren't perfectly amenable to the male-female marriage motif, which I'm sorry, you know, that, can I be honest? I said, marriage isn't a bed of roses either, particularly. This is, there's difficult things to work out. You have to work out how to work with each other. You go, trust me, it'd be 1,000 times easier for us not to have to have these relationships, not to have to become like this, knowing that becoming like God involves you being sealed eternally, a man and a woman together. Perhaps a man with two or three women sealed together. I just, you know, you may not like it, you may not think it fits into your cute little world, I go, but it makes a whole heck of a lot more sense, because guess what, babies don't come from under cabbage leaves here either. Why are we going through this charade here? Why is there so much pain, torture, and despair? Why do the animals behave that way? Why do we behave that way? Why does it appear that this is something that we continue to be able to do in the eternities if we merit it? Instead of this whole situation being an ennobling thing that civilizes men, that protects women, everybody's supposed to be taking care of each other and looking out for everyone. And more than anything else, protecting through family bonds, new generations that come in, you know. Our kids don't just stand up on their feet a couple of minutes after they're born and pick up a knife and start hunting. They don't do that. And I don't think that's because they're not acculturated to it properly. I think that's just the way it is. And having kids come out from under cabbage leaves doesn't work very good. If I was a wolf and I wanted to have a constant supply of easy pickings, tasty meat, I would hang out around cabbage patches and wait to hear a little squalling coming from some kind of kid who's just appeared under the cabbage leaves. I said, you know, I said, this is so chock full of stupidity that it's almost painful. But it's like, oh no, this is going to be so much better. This is really the way it's always been. And they're going, no, it's not the way it is now. I said, and if Earth life is so massively different from pre-Earth life, where we were living with our heavenly parents, and post-Earth life, where if we merit it, we parent spirits to help them to progress, which makes a lot of sense. That's what we do here. If that's not how it went before or how it went after, then it's really stupid for it to work like this here. What's the stuff here supposed to prove? At least with the vision of how it works through LDS doctrine. If you're a crappy parent and you're a bad person, you're not going to get the opportunity to make other children's lives miserable by denying them their birthright, which is the opportunity to become like God. Ta-da! To say that anybody of any persuasion can do it is to say, well then, who's to say that, you know, it isn't, you know, why do you have to keep the commandments? Well, it prepares you for something in the future, and you go, no, it doesn't. It doesn't prepare you for a damn thing. According to your way of looking at it. According to you, you know, there's no rules, there's no bad things. And you go, so we all get to move on, even if we're jerks, even if we as men spread our seed all over the world and had sex with anything that would stand still long enough, have innumerable children, because which we don't even know their names or even who their mothers are. Godhood. Something we can probably steal away God cream from whoever we can get it from. Rub it all over ourselves and suddenly we're God. Come up with any kind of doctrine we want to because it works, because we say it does. That doesn't work down here. people are killing themselves to make it try and work here, but it's all a lie. If it doesn't work here, why would it all of a sudden start working someplace else? It's like this is the only place where you have to have sperm and egg combined to make a body, to house a soul, to house a spirit. Sorry, boy, I better use good words. To house a spirit turned into a soul, body and spirit together. To see how we will behave as parents, to see how we'll behave as people, as a test to say, what capabilities are you going to have going forward? I don't know if I've said it, or I've thought it many times, I don't know if I've said it on any recordings, but I used to watch Star Trek The Next Generation, and this is where one finds out about, I'm sure that Starfleet Academy was alluded to. In the original series, I don't remember it being anything more than just being alluded to. Kind of a new space analog to the military academies, which I think is funny because even though the whole point of Starfleet is supposed to be about exploration, it sure looks military to me. It sure acts military. I actually thought that would be that it needed the kind of military order that one would need. I thought the execution of Roddenberry thought that, whatever. And they came up with a psychological test, and it was really kind of a. They drop you into a. Really tough scenario. Perhaps a no-win situation. Something bad was going to happen. Somebody needed to be left behind to die. And how did you make that decision? And how did you decide, you know, what went into the circumstances? And I really do think that that Earth life could be compared to that psychological test in Star Trek, The Next Generation, for entry to Starfleet Academy. This is all has to do with Wesley Crusher. And the sad part was that he was so brilliant, so wonderful, but yet he wasn't making it into Starfleet Academy for the simple reason that the dude had the actor playing him had a contract. And they couldn't, you know, they had to keep paying him. So he had to keep appearing on the show. And he couldn't just go off to some place. They're paying him. So he had to kind of fail the test. And no real explanation, you know, well, you just didn't get enough points. You were very close, but you didn't make it. You know, there's other people who scored higher than you did. Of course, we have absolutely no idea how one earns points, and that's always convenient. But to be honest, Earth life's a little like that too. don't exactly know what the criteria for exaltation is. But you've got to pass a certain criteria. Continue to be considered for. That criteria is baptism. You have to have that ordinance done for you. And you have to honor that ordinance and all the responsibilities that come with it. Nobody really knows beyond that what the boundary lines are, except that you have to repent of all your sins, so you gotta be baptized. I mean, you can go to the celestial kingdom. Now that's not exaltation. That's just being in God's presence again. That's not exaltation. I'm sorry to tell the Christians that. Swear that that's it, you know, and that there's nothing more, and you're going, wow, kind of easy pickings. It says, except for the sad part that the vast majority of people aren't even going to be able to meet that criteria. Basic commandments and an ordinance won't do it. Like this woman I was talking about, with her whole idea that all of us spirits coexisted with God eternally as spirits, and God, I don't know, chose us out. Big group of people, I don't know, and they picked out, okay, I'll take this guy, these people. We agreed to be their God. We'll teach them how to progress and grow. And we'll basically prepare them to become like us. Life is relatively short. The fact that it can be hard, unfair, tragic, painful. Everybody says, well, that's proof that there's not a God, because a God wouldn't let this situation be like that. And you go, if it's a test, the worse it is, the better the test is. To see what you'll do under difficult circumstances. God's not that cruel. He says, I'm going to put in things to lead you to a better life. I'm going to send prophets to tell you how to access God. Tell you how to get blessings, to tell you how to live your life in harmony with God so that He will bless you and your earth life may get demonstrably easier, or at least you will understand why things are happening. Know that this earth life, this mortality, is just temporary. But that the things that you do here, baptism, marriage, children, making covenants with God and keeping them, have far-reaching eternal consequences. And they've got to be done here. And in the end, He'll make sure everybody has the opportunity. Everybody will have at least a decent knowledge of commandments, scriptures, good and evil. And you'll be able to, you know, everyone will have the opportunity to be exalted. There is no person that, due to circumstances, simply cannot qualify to move forward. It's just simply not there. Everybody can do it. You can sit there and say, well, I'm being told that I can't do it because I'm gay. And you go, you know what? Number one, you don't have to, quote, be gay. There is no rule in your skin that says that you're gay and that prevents you from 100 things. And you have to come to that. I'm sorry. You can say all day long, well, people are just born that way. And you go, I don't care. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you go over someone of the same sex as you. For the most part, those kinds of feelings and getting wrapped up in that kind of stuff is not ennobling, it's a distraction. And it doesn't mean that you're a wonderful person. It just means you're a person. But being just a person doesn't qualify you for much. Honestly. And not the life that God leads. You're not prevented from doing anything. Answering your feelings is not a sufficient excuse to excuse you and to say, oh, well, this test doesn't apply to you. You can do whatever you want and you'll be passed right through. That's not the criteria. If you don't understand, if you're I hate using politically correct terms. If you have a retarded mind, if you have circumstances, then yeah, you're passed through. That's part of the test. But if you can understand about the commandments and what's required to keep them and why you have to do this and why you have to do that, and understand baptism and what it means and what you're promising to do, then you don't have an excuse. You can't just say, well, I don't have, I'm a man, I don't have the hots for women. I've never met a woman that I've got the hots for. Therefore, I should be exempt from following just, boy, a cornucopia of commandments. It's like, I'm sorry, that doesn't cut it. That doesn't cut it. If you want exaltation, you can devote yourself to a member of the opposite sex and get married to them. You can do that. And you can say, well, it's not like I really love them or anything. It's like, you know what? I don't even think that kind of love even enters into the equation particularly. It's wonderful if you can have it, and that's great. You got to be careful, though, because that kind of infatuation, that kind of kind of stuff, that dies out. And then, you know, and then what? You can just pick up and go and do something else? Find something else? Pleasure yourself? It's like, that's not the program, man. Your hand in masturbation do not show God that you're worthy for godhood, does it? Number one, you're not going to be able to produce spirit bodies necessary for this stuff. I don't know how that works. You know, I don't want to think that it's poor woman's just down at the farm just cranking out spirit bodies like crazy for intelligences to jump into. I'm not thinking that's probably the way it is. I think it certainly has something to do with the combination of man and woman, exalted man and woman, to be able to do it. Anyway, so, yes, it was just such a bizarre little article. And it could be picked apart so readily from just, well, how's that supposed to work? What kind of logic supports that sort of scenario? And she wove into it, which I think was hilarious, hatred of polygamy, how terrible that is. And you go, okay, well, fine, all right, you know. The deification of single parenthood, which is like, wait a minute. I said, how are you going to get people to the next estate? Like I said, you're just going to find them under a cabbage leaf and take them in, you know? Because that's basically what you're saying is, that's what it is. It's just a, you know, it's just this big old field of underdeveloped spirits, and you go out and you pick them like so many daisies. I'll take you. I like you. Oh no, I don't want anything to do with you. And it's like, wow, well, that's interesting. You know, I don't know. I don't know how that works. I don't know how any of this stuff really works. My finite mind can't really grasp it. But with what a finite mind I have, it doesn't make any sense that it would work that way there and yet work in the traditional, I forget what it's called. It's not mitosis. The joining together of chromosomes between sperm and egg, however that mechanism kind of comes together spiritually. Joseph Smith was the first one, and she was hanging her hat on a statement Joseph Smith made. You go, did Joseph Smith say a lot of other things about how the spiritual and the temporal were basically were the same? There's no spiritual law that isn't a temporal law. There's no temporal law that's a spiritual law. That's a paraphrase, but that's what it basically means. Which also means to say that anything that's done spiritually gets done physically. That's why Genesis is so interesting. And when people read it, they go, wait a minute, this thing has the creation happening twice. And you're going, yes, the creation did happen twice. First it was done spiritually. That's almost kind of the planning stage of it. This is exactly how it's going to be done, and they did it spiritually, and they said, okay, now we're going to go and we're going to do it out of rock and stone as opposed to spiritual matter. And all these things are a type of how things go. We have choices here on earth. We had choices in the pre-existent world. We will continue to have choices in the future. She totally flushed that one down the toilet in this article by acting like the temple ceiling, which is eternal marriage, was some kind of suicide pact almost, that women were chained to a man that they might not even know very well or not want to be with once they learned the kind of man they were while they were down on earth. But there's these chains placed around them by the ceiling ordinance, and you're going, wow, whoever said that? That is a big bunch of hooey. You had a choice in what you wanted to do before you came here. You certainly have choices in what you want to do while you're here. And let me tell you, in the pre-six beyond, you still got all the choices. You can say, I don't want him. I don't want her. I don't want that. Even if you qualify for exaltation, you can turn it down. And I know people say, why would you ever want to do that? And you go, you know what? There's all kinds of people out there. There's all kinds of people out there. And I'm not going to discount the fact that some people who are going to be like, I qualified for exaltation, but I really didn't want to go through all the work. I wanted a kind of a 9-to-5 job. I picture the celestial kingdom like Downton Abbey. I think I've done this before. You know, God is the family. You know, a mother and a father and their children coming forth. We were all part of that. We were in the precincts of God's mansion, Downton Abbey, as kind of a thing. You know, and there was Lord and Lady Grantham and their girls. Just imagine that it's a lot more kids, but still the same thing. And there are all these angels around, and they're housemaids and butlers and nannies and all the stuff, all of the service people of this thing. That's the second tier people. And there's a lot of people that would just say, I don't want the responsibility of being a god. I don't think I have the heart to send children into a world and watch them do horrendous things with their agency, with their freedom to choose. You can look around everywhere on this earth, and there's plenty of people now who are perfectly nice people and sweet, nice people, but they can't stand seeing suffering. And that's just life. That's just the way that people are. There's going to be suffering. And it's tough when it's your kids. When it's your kids suffering. But they're suffering because of their choices. And you go, I can't just take their choices away from them. They can do whatever they like. But I can tell them when I'm going to intervene and when I'm not. You know, if you don't wake up someday and say, you know what, I want a different life. My parents taught me differently than that. I'm going to go and I'm going to ask them to please, you know, it's kind of the prodigal son story. I'm going to ask them just to take me in as a servant, perhaps. And you're going, no, they're glad you came back. They're going to celebrate. You're their son again. Now, you might not have all the wonders that you could have once had because you screwed the pooch. You know, you blasted all that. You know, there's only so much inheritance to go around, except for God's case. He can. There's plenty of inheritance for everybody who can qualify themselves for it. But that's the deal. You got to qualify. Anyway, so you have those people. Or you have the people out in the village. I remember in Downton Abbey, what was his name? Lesson. He ended up doing some school teaching. He kind of found his calling. He really didn't do very well in service. He wasn't humble enough. He was always ticking off the wrong people. There was a time there when he was working in the village, filling in potholes in the street. He was being a street laborer, making the streets there in 1920, whatever. And that's the bargain basement of the celestial kingdom, you know. I live in the village. It's nice to be in proximity with God. God's a good Lord. You can say, well, Lord Grantham had his problems and he was backwards and he didn't do that. I said, trust me, God's not. Being a servant, even the least servant of God, is really quite nice. Takes care of his people, and everybody who's there has proved their loyalty to a certain extent. Not as much as those who are going to be exalted, who are working toward exaltation. And you go, well, that's a caste system, and those are terrible. And you go, well, you know what? I'm sorry. It says at some point God's got to say, okay. Tryouts are over. You made it. You were very diligent and very, very loyal and did all the things that I asked you to do, and the reward for that is exaltation. You're going to be trained and you're going to be exalted. Become like me. The group that was pretty good, well, that's okay. You can work in the household. Not tough work. You know. Like I said, kind of like a 9-to-5 job, you know, you get your weekends off to recreate, now you're not going to get married and you're not going to, you know, and you're not going to have children. It says you'll just continue as you are. I think it's not like Downton Abbey, you know, where people were having children and these things were happening. That doesn't work there. Only the people who are exalted have the capacity to bring spirits into the world, to forward people to an earth and stuff like that. The other people just don't have that stuff. And they didn't do what it took to do that. Anyway, so yeah. And yeah, and this woman in her article seems to say, oh no, you don't have to have any of that. you know, you can just twinkle your nose and children assigned to you appear. And you go, if it doesn't work like that here, it doesn't work like that there. I don't know, you know, I don't know the mechanics of it. I just know that to have Earth life be any kind of decent test, it's got to test the proper criteria. And the people who get to do that are the people who are marrying, working out their exaltation together as husband and wife, man and woman, in marriage, both focusing on the same things, perhaps being very different people, but having the same purpose, where they want to go, what they want to do, how they love their children, and how they want to raise them properly, and that's the test. If you put forth your good effort in this life doing that, then you will do well in the precincts to come. And you can say, well, that's not fair. And you go, who said the test was fair? You need to put something into it. Why is it always somebody else's job to make sure that you get what you want? It's your job to make sure you get what you want. Ta-da! Golly! That's always been the criteria. You can't be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company unless you put forth the effort to do what it takes to become the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. I know it appears that these things just get kind of laid on some people, and you can say, well, I can do what they're doing. I can do this and I can do that. I can sit in an office and sign papers and stuff like that. That's not hard. And you're going, fine, then do it. And you go, but they won't let me. And you go, why? Okay, have you ever considered why they're not letting you? Because trust me, if you had the chops and if they thought you could make them a lot of money, they'd let you do it. And, you know, people say, well, they don't let women do that. They don't let that kind of person or that kind of person. They don't let black people do that. And you go, trust me, they would in a red-hot second if they thought it was going to profit the company and make them all richer. They would do it in a gosh darn freaking second. The only problem is you show no potential to be able to do it. And you're not willing to put forth the effort to show them that you should be given the opportunity. You're just not doing it. You're just sitting there bawling and complaining. Which is what this article was basically doing. Was saying that it's not fair that everybody should be able to do this, no matter where they come from and no matter how they feel, all those feelings. And you go, you know what? A Fortune 500 CEO cares about this much about feelings, and I've got a little bitty thing, maybe about a millimeter opening there between my pointer and my thumb finger. Nobody cares about feelings. This is about, are you willing to do what's required to accomplish what you want? And that's it. And sometimes I come back and I go, well, I'm not really quite sure. I'm not sure I am willing to put forth that much effort. And you go, and the basic answer should be, what do you need to do to get there? What does it really mean to you? And it's okay. If you really don't have any aspirations toward that, if you really don't care, I think one of the hard and fast rules of, if you don't care, then shut up. Nobody wants to hear your belly aching and whining about the fact that you don't get some of the perks of those who have really put forth the effort to get the perks. You don't get the You don't get to have your name slapped on the side of a business jet and be able to fly here, there, and yon just because you think that would be fun. This isn't some Hollywood changeling movie. Those things don't happen. I know you go, I'm sorry, Hunter Biden's a moron. And you go, it doesn't matter if Hunter Biden's a moron. Hunter Biden lives in this family, and he gets this and he gets that. And you can say there's graft and corruption, and you go, yeah. And you go, is that the way it is in heaven? And you go, no. And you go, so is Hunter Biden gonna be a god? And you go, I'm not here to judge, but I'm pretty sure the answer's no. You can't trick and lie and use your father's name to get something. You know why? Everybody on this planet is Heavenly Father's child. You're not special that way. I know that sounds bad. Oh no, that makes us all special. You go, special in that everybody has the capability of becoming like God. It's in your genetic makeup that it's possible. But it's not your genes that gets you there. It's everything else. And the requirements of what you need to accomplish during this earth life aren't that hard at all. Christ even said that it wasn't that hard. Take my yoke upon you. You know, it's light. But you've got to do it. You know, you've got to be baptized by the proper authority. Don't just sit around and say, well, I got baptized by Jim Bob over here. And you go, is he authorized by God? Oh, I don't know. He was just sitting there at the water baptizing people. And you go, But you don't know if he's authorized by God. No, I don't have a clue. And you go, well, you might get lucky. And you go, so are you keeping the commands? Oh, no, I don't have to do that. Christ's grace will take care of me. I just need to, you know, I just need to praise Jesus. Praise Jesus! And you're going, you know, it takes a little more than that. Oh, it does? You go, yeah. Since Christ brought it up quite poignantly in the scriptures. I know some people have picked out a couple of verses and said, oh, look, it's this, you know, and so many people today now are all about the love of Christ and about, well, Christ loves me just the way I am. And you go, you know, love isn't the big thing, and it's not Christ's job to exalt you just because he loves you. That's not the thing. The love is there. The love's been manifest. The fact that you're going to get a body back again through resurrection that everybody gets. Ding! A gift from Christ. Why? Because he loves you. The atonement. Taking upon himself our sins if we will repent. That's the big thing, if we will repent. We have to repent, we have to change, we have to get better. If we don't do that, then we don't get, then the atonement doesn't work for us. And we're unclean. God throws us out. No unclean thing. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da! Now, you'll still go to a nice place because you've actually been loyal in the past and don't even remember it. That's okay. Anyway. But, yeah. See, and all this stuff, as it fits together and as it makes sense, it's like, well, that's really plausible. You know, my preacher didn't teach it to me, so I'm not going to believe that. You know, because he taught me something simpler, or he taught me that God's going to smite me every time I do something wrong. And you're sitting there going, well, okay, I'm waiting for God to smite me, and he hasn't done it yet. You go, well, you know, God punishes when he punishes, and he blesses when he blesses. He's pretty consistent. He's pretty consistent about it, what he punishes and what he blesses. You know, and just because it doesn't happen immediately, I committed adultery with somebody, and God hasn't smitten me down yet, so I don't believe God really exists. And you go, okay. So you can believe that all day long. Things are still going to be rather okay with you, probably, because you're going to go to someplace nice. You know, but God's not going to be there, and you're certainly not going to have any great opportunities. You're just going to have a place to stay, and it's nice, and the food's provided, and there's going to be plenty of other people there with you, and I hope you don't mind them, because, you know, they're going to be murderers and cutthroats and stuff like that. Now, they're not going to be able to kill you anymore, but that doesn't mean that they aren't a pleasant lot to be around all of a sudden. But it's nicer than it is here on Earth, in mortality. This is definitely the rock bottom. Everything past this gets better, except if you're like Cain, Satan, some of the people in the Bible. Look at Genesis and all the bad guys who were killing people for fun and profit. I said those are the kind of guys that end up going off. Or people who take great pains to make sure that, number one, they're not going to get exalted, but to make sure that you don't get exalted either. Encourage lots of people not to get exalted. There's money in that. If you've noticed on YouTube, these people make some money. You know, there's Patreon for people who say, oh, I am just so excited that you freed me from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Here's some money, you know. And it's like, hey, man, this is a paying proposition, you know, talking people out of following God, talking people out of believing in Jesus Christ. It's a good flowing business, man. And to have people pay you their own money to keep you out of exaltation. What a fantastic, what an amazing thing. Wow. A sucker born every minute is probably what you might be saying to yourself. Well, there it is. Sucker born every minute. Anyway, so yeah. So I feel bad because it's like, never, we don't even know what you're talking about. You haven't been able to explain it very readily, and I apologize for it. I wish I could drum up that thing. I wish that I could just bring it up and say, this is her name, this is what she says, and this is the concept that she really preaches. She's got a nice term for it, a three-word term about this doctrine. And anyway, but yeah, it's like, you know, this if LDS church doctrine, some people go, well, that's really fantastic, you know, as in it's a fantasy. That's a really interesting fantasy. Trust me, this alternate take on it is even further fantastic, as in it doesn't even make sense to me, to anybody. So yeah, and I can't imagine for a minute that anybody really puts much stock in it. Most people who really are attracted to deep feminism, which I think is hilarious, because when it gets mixed in with transgender, those are two groups that are so bizarre bedfellows, but yet it's like, oh, we're a big community, LGBTQ, yada, yada, yada community, and you're going, this is not a community. trust me, he says, gays don't have anything in common with transgenders. Radicalized feminists are not really all that big about people just changing their gender and deciding now that they're a woman. Although they try to say, we're just one big happy family, and we all take care of each other, and we just tell each other that everything you want to do is just fine, and that doesn't work for very long. Really, honestly, everything starts kind of falling apart, because it doesn't reflect reality. You can play that game for a very long time. Oh yes, I did that. We raised 3 children. And you're going, but they weren't your children. And you go, well, it was mine. One of them was mine. I slipped up. I didn't stay gay. I decided that, you know, that I was bisexual for a while. You know, and that's one of them, LGB. B is bisexual, which means that you're going to have sex with anything that'll sit still long enough. And that means that maybe you'll have sex with somebody of the opposite gender. Oh my gosh. Which means it might actually be effective. And all of a sudden there's a child born. And if on the off chance you let that child live, because as part of this group, you're usually aligned pretty strongly with those who are about abortion. And you're going, well, I like this and I don't like that. And you go, that's fine. I said, but yeah, your community is going to be giving you crap and telling you why you're having a child. Why are you letting that child live? And you're going, wow, you're just going to compound sin upon sin, aren't you? To the point to where you can say, oh, I'm a good person, and you're going, you know, you left that so long ago, and we can tell by the behavior that you do right now that you're not a particularly good person. You know, the trail of broken hearts, people who wanted to have a deep and lasting relationship that was fulfilling, and you were just yet another person who had a weird ulterior motive for the way you were behaving and for the things that you said and the things that you proclaimed were honest for you. And people get upset because they go, I feel like I got jilted by this person. And you go, well, yeah. I'm sorry, you know, I thought they were a good person. And you go, what gave you the impression that they could have been a good person? We were all about having sex with all kinds of people. This is not a good thing. This is not the mark of a good person. The person who says, oh, well, I'm trying to save the earth. And you go, whatever. It says, but look, yeah. It says, how many old boyfriends / girlfriends / whatever, people who thought that you were going to be loyal to them in the way that they had heard of in the fairy tales, in the way that marriage is supposed to be, but you've so violated marriage, then how on earth can it possibly produce the results you hope for? Well, we had a really expensive wedding with lots of flowers, and you go, and you found out that that's not the thing. That's not what makes it happen. And I don't know what kind of childish view, what kind of child glasses you were wearing when you thought that this was going to make it all work out. Being gay or lesbian, by nature, says that you're going to be promiscuous. You are trying to figure out what kind of sexuality you're into. So that means you haven't been loyal to someone. You know, you can say, well, we were all consenting and And we all went into it saying that we weren't going to have any feelings, and we weren't going to feel badly, and we weren't going to, you know, we weren't going to shame each other about the fact that we're being very, very voyeuristic about our sexual explorations to figure out what we really prefer, what we really like. Try before you buy. And it's like, yeah, it says, and now you're going to get married and it's going to be okay. And you're going, you know what? Chances aren't very good. Now, people can change. People can repent. People can get better. But it really has to do with them also just coming back and saying, you know what? That was something that I used to do. I don't do that anymore. It was a bad idea. You know, and I'm a changed person. I don't behave like that anymore. I'm not saying people can't do that. In fact, I encourage people to do that. Come away from that kind of behavior. Don't look at it as something positive and wonderful, because if you still think it's positive and wonderful, you're going to do it, even if you're married. I always put it in the terms of men. I apologize, I'm a man. I always put it in terms of you're breaking some woman's heart. Because she really wants something huge out of these kinds of relationships. To her, marriage means something, usually. It means total, It means total commitment to this, to her. It says, and when you don't do that, you know, it's not good. Now, I'm not saying that women are the victims and women are pure as driven stone. There's plenty of women who have decided that this is really their kind of thing too. And they're not good people. They're not good people either. Now, men don't have, I think, that kind of deep emotional attraction and connection early on. I think that builds, at least in my case, I think it did. It built over time. But I was still loyal. And she and my wife grew to trust me. There's plenty of reasons why she didn't trust people, men. She had had, I don't want to say relationships because it sounds like they were sexual. She had sexual relations before we were born that I'm aware of. She was raped once. And she dated a lot, which I dated almost nil. I had a handful of dates before I married my wife. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. You know, the number of dates isn't the big thing. But those are potential things. And after a while, you might get very jaded. But many, many people are very jaded now. Even if they don't have a lot of... Even if they avoid sex before marriage, all these tries to try and find somebody that you really care about and that you really love... it's just, you know, you can get jaded really fast. Well, you can jade over time, and it's hard. And so, even once you're married, there is a lot of loyalty testing to be done, and there certainly was, I think, in my marriage. I think it took a long time until my wife felt comfortable that I was going to be loyal to her. And, you know, was there slip-ups? Not the sexual variety in our case, but times when she felt that I wasn't being completely loyal to her. And you know what? It doesn't matter whether that's true or not. It's how she felt. And so that had to be rectified. Sometimes it took a long time to get that back. And I had to throw my loyalty out there. And sometimes it probably wasn't very reciprocated, you know. And somebody has to do that. I think both of us did that in our own ways for saying we're sticking with this. We found the marriage itself was almost its own entity, and one has to pour a lot into that, and that helps everybody feel more confident that this is going to hang together, that we're not going to find reasons just to walk away from each other, break one heart or another, perhaps both. Men, as far as I'm aware of, men have to prove themselves to a large degree, and it's not a question of fairness. Women get to decide whether you're being loyal to them or not. I don't know if there's a counterbalancing thing for it. On the women's side, I really don't. It's probably easily portrayed by the concept of the doghouse. Men don't put women in doghouses. That does not happen. Women put men in doghouses so often, it's a joke. You know, it's always talked about. So, how are you doing? Oh, I'm in the doghouse. They go, yeah. You know, I said something wrong, I did something wrong. There was something she really wanted, and I didn't pick up on the fact that she wanted it. And, and now she'll hardly talk to me. And I've got to grovel so she'll treat me well enough, you know, that she won't just turn me aside. It's like, wow. And you go, so what's the thing about, you know, what do men do? And you go, put up with it. That's pretty much it. You know, women really have lots and lots of control there. Now, you can know about MGTOW and stuff like that, but that's garbage too. That's giving up. That's giving up and trying to make some kind of measure that women, you can just say, you know, the whole MGTOW thing, I think, is about I'm handsome and I'm available and women want me and I play games with them and then I say, oh no, I'm not, nope. I don't think anything of you. I'm playing with you. We're having fun, you know. I'm having fun. She probably thinks she's trying to find a husband and he's just like, I'm just looking for a one-night stand, for a euphemism to use, you know? And you're going, is that good? Of course not. This is dumb. It's a dumb thing to do. You're not going to find happiness that way either, although men are far more capable of finding happiness being single than women are. Because for men, it's physical. That's why being gay works so well. Is because it's really easy to satisfy men sexually. And you can have men that try to play the role of girls, but in the end, they really don't. That's kind of the Hollywood portrayal of it, you know. Really effeminate guys who hang out together, you know, and are just girlfriends. And you're going, but you have to understand, you know, girls, girlfriend, you know, women, it's not a physical thing as much as it is an emotional and almost attachment thing for women, as far as I'm aware of. And that's why women are so weird about, you know, it's almost like some kind of weird test. If I do something, if I really treat this guy bad, will he stay with me? And the MGTOW thing is, you know, if you treat me bad, I don't want anything to do with you. And the girl's like confused and going, well, wait a minute, no, I'm here testing you. You're supposed to prove your loyalty to me no matter what. And you go, and a lot of girls have just taken it way too far. But you know, a real man, chivalrous man, I suppose, is a good thing to say, will put up with a lot of stuff. Now, to a certain extent, you can take him too far. But almost, but it's true, I guess, because there's so many people that go ahead and say it, that say that the big thing is that, most divorces are came back to me. Most divorces are initiated by women, and it's usually about men not being loyal enough to them. Because to a large degree, women can be absolutely hideous. And it doesn't matter. If something falls apart, it will be blamed on the man. And that's normal, and I think to a certain degree, that's okay. That means men have to be a little choosy about who they marry. Don't marry a harpy. She'll ruin your life because the evil loyalty test will never, ever, 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 and it never really does end. The fact that you've got to show this loyalty and you have to do it all the time. And that's, you know, and I said, you know, and that mostly comes because women are scared. Women are scared that they're going to lose their security. And I don't mean it's especially money. Some people put it into a thing of money, you know, well, he lost, you know, and women divorce people over them losing their jobs or falling from financial fitness. That's common. But it has so much more to do with you know, not meeting that standard. Women get to set the standards. And if you don't meet their standards, the system really is stacked that they can just leave. And they can leave pretty much scot-free. Everything's fine. Society will prop them up. Even if you've had children, you know, you're going to be supporting those children, even if that woman wants nothing to do with you ever again, because they don't like you or whatever, or it just fell apart. It's really easy now to just get out of these marriages, which probably isn't a very good thing. Anyway, so, boy, I'm getting around about all these things. But yeah, these are things that really kind of mess up the whole shebang. Women going out and acting like men does not take care of what women really need. And I'm sorry, that's just simply it. They can have a fantastic career, which is what everybody tells them they should be satisfied with. Number one, most women don't, career is nothing to them. And that's okay. A career is nothing to me. I don't have a career. I've never been interested in being a career person. I've had a string of jobs. And I want to do a good job in the job, but I have straight jobs, so it wasn't a great thing for me. So yeah, and you go, you know, says, I don't think I would be a very big catch now. I might be a better catch than I was in the past because I make a lot more money than I used to. And, but my wife didn't know that when we got married. She was taking a huge risk on me. Trust me, her parents, I think, tried to swear her off of me because I just didn't seem like I was very, I was going to turn out very good that way. Turns out I'm pretty good that way. I do okay. I mean, I'm not six figures, but I'm not too far off of six figures at all. Anyway, but that's me now, you know. I'm very attractive to that kind of person, but I'm sorry, I put 33 years into my marriage and into doing, into being whatever my wife needs. And, you know, and do women really realize when they have a good thing? Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. But sometimes they don't. Even when everything's wonderful, it's just not quite good enough. You know? And that's just the way that females are going to be. That's just the way girls are going to be. They're never going to be fully happy. And it's almost built into them. And society teaches them to be this way, to have extremely high standards, and to always be pushing to have better things, to have a, you know, a better circumstance, you know, to feel better. But, you know, it really is all about whether they feel secure. And are they going to test it? Yes. They're going to test it. Now, it may not be intentional tests. It may not be something planned. It may not be something like that. But it's, if girls have a breakdown, nervous breakdown, whatever, that's just par for the course, right? That's just women being women. They're going to have breakdowns. They're going to cry. They're going to, you know, they're going to have those kinds of problems. Now, if a man does that, that's immediate grounds for a divorce. Right there is to say, I don't think he can support me. I don't think he can take care of us. I don't think he can do this. I don't think he can do that. He just lost all trust I had in him to be able to make things happen because he had a breakdown. And you go, well, says, and you go, is that fair? And you go, there's no fair about it. He says, girls can have a breakdown every other day, and it's perfectly fine. They can go and get up and go run, stay with their mother for a couple of weeks. They can go to a nice restaurant, drink a lot of wine, eat some very expensive meals with other girlfriends, and talk trash about husbands and boyfriends, and weep about all these things and be supportive of each other and take care of each other and say how right they are for feeling this way and how horrible that man could be for doing that. And you go, yeah, and that's exactly it. And what do guys have to do? The only recourse guys have, if they want to preserve marriage relationship, is that they've got to pull it together. They got to step up their game. Or that woman has every right to say, you know what, I can fight that in you. I'm out of here. Even if they really might not be able to find anything better, they could find something different, at least. guys are out in the cold. And you go, wow, huh. So yeah, if you are looking for fairness in this, that just indicates how adolescent you are. If you're looking for fairness, it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I was talking to a 13-year-old person. I thought you were an adult that understood that everything is different for different people. And the difference between the sexes is amazing and extremely predictable. And people say, you should stereotype people. And you go, I don't have to stereotype people. I can tell you exactly how it's going to go, and it will go exactly that way. Because I'm not stupid. Or naive. Or expecting life to be different than life is. So yeah, that's fine. You know. And so yeah, this woman in this article, I can't believe I'm circling back this after all this time, is basically telling the whole story that men are jerks. You know, try to keep you down the path, chain you down, make you do what they want to do because they're an evil, nasty patriarchy, and this is the church of the nasty, ugly patriarchy. And you're going, boy, let me tell you, if this church, if the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is what you say it is, then they're doing a terrible job of being a really big patriarchal church. They're doing a terrible job of it. I'm sorry. As a group, they suck at it. Guy, you know, it's like you make these accusations as if the church is doing a fantastic job at something. And, you know, I can I be honest? I'm hard-pressed to say that the church does anything very, very well. The fact that it's both centralized and decentralized is stupid. At least from any kind of sensibility. Now, the fact that God wants it done this way, I'm not sure I'm really gung-ho about, oh, it's a perfect, wonderful organization, and go, I don't think so. This is because it's mostly guys who, they said, can I be honest? The vast majority, the huge majority, in fact, I can't think of one that doesn't come from this kind of a background, is in management. You can say, oh, but well, one's a pilot, one's a lawyer, one's a doctor. And you go, yeah, and? Well, this one's an academic. And you go, and? This is, they all came from management. It says, so the church does, it's a huge management experiment. I'm not saying inspiration from God isn't in there. I'm not saying that's not happening. but when people say, oh, the church organization is perfect, I just shiver. Because it changes all the time. And it changes according to the winds of all kinds of things. Right now, the fact that a lot of accusations are made at the church about women not having enough authority. They haven't yet given women the priesthood. And as far as I know, when it comes to the agenda of God, there isn't a logical, compelling argument against letting the women have the priesthood. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm not saying that's in the mind of God to do. Now, if you compare it with, well, you know, when are you going to be solemnizing gay marriages in your temples and saying that Adam and Steve are going to be exalted as a couple. I'm sorry, that's not the agenda of God. That's not going to happen. And you guys putting on pressure to do that is just, it's silly. You can see how they long, how evil these guys are for not letting these kinds of things happen and not accepting how your feelings on this. But that's not, that doesn't align with the agenda of God. That can't happen. You can't procreate that way. And that's one of the requirements of being a God, is being a procreative unit. Ain't gonna happen. Single women being gods, how's that gonna work? And you go, it doesn't. And you go, see, it's not the agenda of God, can't do it. But when they say, well, what about women getting the priesthood? And you're going, well, I don't think there's anything in the agenda of God, at least. Now, it may just be God saying there's things that I have men do and there's things I have women do. And I know that's really politically incorrect in this day and age. But God's not beholden to political correctness. He doesn't have to worry about that. He could just go on with the way he wants to go on. The same yesterday, today, and forever kind of way of doing it. But yeah, the church itself, it's always in flux to a certain degree. It's always in a matter of change. You can go back and see how the church was 100 years ago, and you'd see some things that were familiar a little bit, and you'd see a ton of things where you're going, wow, this is completely different from how the church is organized or how programs are conducted, or the kind of things we do with youth and with young people, with new converts, completely different. All these things are changing. Everybody says, oh, but we're getting closer and closer to the perfect organization. And they're going, well, then don't say it's a perfect organization, number one. And number two, it says, I think the changes have just as much to do with the winds of society and culture, you know. So I don't know what's going to happen with women in the priesthood. I really don't. Because it may very well happen. Now, some of this other fringy stuff about about everybody thinks they're part and parcel. Well, if you give women the priesthood, there's going to, of course, be gay marriage in the temple. And you're going, oh, why would you think that would be so? Anyway, and I'm not being an apologist. I'm just saying what I see from the standpoint of what I know of God and what I know of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And you're going, you know, I don't think that there's anything inherent about women not being able to have the priesthood, except that the Lord just may say, I'm sorry, men get the priesthood, women don't. Have priesthood offices, women don't. And we're always changing these terms to try and make it sound more palatable to the current sensibilities of the day. Like right now, we tell people, you know, people say, well, you guys treat gays terrible, and we go, no, we don't. We don't do that. Now we can't, you know, they can come to our meetings, they can participate as fully as they want to, as long as they keep the standards that have been set. We're not going to change the standards, which is really what the LGBT community wants. They want standards to be altered to please them. And it's like, nah, they're not going to change the standards, but if there's problems and gay people are feeling like they're being picked on, we're going to work hard to make sure that they don't feel picked on. You know, they're just as welcome in the church as anybody else is. So now, we don't want them spewing their stuff around here. It says they can freely come, and we'll treat them hopefully nicely. transgenders? I don't know, because almost immediately there's problems. Having men who have decided that they're women going to relief society is going to present some problems. And we're certainly not going to give the priesthood to a woman who's taking testosterone and removed her breasts or installed a silicone penis on herself. We're not going to give her the priesthood yet. You know, I don't know if that changes at some point, and it may very well change for the whole thing of, you know, it's just too... Pretty soon we're going to have problems figuring out who are men and who are women. Because, you know, okay, there's this one person, Blair White. I can't tell through any instrumentality that Blair White is a man. Except probably to tell him/her to drop their pants. And it's like, and I do believe that Blair White still possesses a penis, because Blair White is actually a man. You know, but let me tell you, if Blair White were to just walk into someplace, I would treat Blair White like a woman, because gives every impression of being a woman, and all that stuff. I think it's going to get difficult soon, and we may not be able to keep the priesthood as male only, because we're not going to have a way to ensure that men are men. I'm not sure what that means. I don't know if God's going to shut down things before it gets to that point. We just may have to say, you know what? Everybody gets to have the priesthood. You know? And we're not going to have a separation anymore. We're going to get rid of the Relief Society, because we're not going to have separate things for women. They're going to have to go to men's things, and it's going to be really weird. Because the men are going to have to spend a lot more time trying to deal with women's feelings in priesthood. We're just going to have to let the women kind of take over. Because that's what women want to do. Women are, can I be honest? I haven't met a woman yet who, because of their innate fear on some level about being okay, about doing stuff that doesn't end up being a control freak and wanting to be in control of everything she could possibly control because of, you know, this whole thing about I've got to be, you know, I've got to feel secure. And, you know, that was a man's job, but a lot of women are getting to the point to where they just say, well, you know what, I can't trust men anymore. And you go, well, blame feminism for that, for having a lot of flaccid men who won't provide the necessary security for them to feel secure about whatever they need to feel secure about. But they're okay. So, yeah, are we just going to basically kind of say, you know what, we lost the priesthood, the priesthood's taken over by women, we're just going to stay out of it, you know, they do a much better job at almost everything, that the church wants to have done, every church, the LDS church included, are all becoming extremely feminized. Because that's their concept of what Christ is. That Christ is a very feminized figure. And the LDS church does it just as readily as any other church does it. It's just the way that society and the culture have gone. that Christ is just this puny figure that just radiates love pheromone all over everybody. And because men don't do that, I'm sorry to say, Christ didn't do it either. He was a man, I'm sorry. That women say, you're not a proper representative of Christ. The proper representatives of Christ are women. And you go, okay, well, that's, we're going to lose. And that's why I don't think it's really going to happen, because it's like, okay, men will stop coming to church. Because they'll be like, you don't need me here. And that's what men need more than anything else, to say, I got to be needed. If I'm not needed, I'm not going to show up. You know, I'm not just going to show up because to fill some role, things like that. I've had a lot of men, friends, who have walked away from the church because, you know, church was something that their wife was about. And if their wife stops caring about it, then what on earth is it doing for him? It's a big feminist. Well, it's not a feminist thing. It's a big effeminate thing. And it's like, okay, well, they don't need me there. They just need a bunch of women to do that stuff. It's not true, but that's what would happen. But you know, it's just a classic example, yet again, of feminism thinking that they're going to make things better and actually screwing things up really badly. Men are already having significant problems. And the way men try to adjust to it is, it says, I'll become effeminate and I'll just try and be another girlfriend to her. It says, but the problem is, men are lousy girlfriends. That's just true. The sad part is, Lisa's told me a few times that that's kind of my role. I end up being her best friend. And you're going, oh, Lisa, this, I don't know. That's bad. Because I get wrapped up in the whole BFF thing. And it's like, Lisa, I'm not that person. Okay, I'm gonna, whoa, whee! I'm gonna get off here because I need to pee. As usual. Okay. Maybe I'll stop the recording here. And we're pretty close to it. No, there. 8:39. Oh my gosh, this thing's still trying to do an update. Okay, anyway, so we're gonna let this go. It's gone long enough. I might start another one, but we'll see. Talk to you later. Bye.